This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Royal Blue Podcast on this Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock. We are live on YouTube and Facebook. I am your host, Ian Kroll, and I'm joined by the Echo's Everton FC reporter, Chris Beasley. Chris, how are things? Still got a bit of a sour taste in the mouth following Everton's 3-1 defeat to West Ham on Saturday?
Yeah, I think we've all got that one. That one's going to linger for a while, hasn't it? But we're just kind of gearing up now for what will be Everton's last game for 3 weeks, won't we? We'll be wondering what we're going to do with ourselves the rest of this month.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point, isn't it? There probably won't be much match day content to speak about following the United game, but I'm sure there will be plenty of content to speak about regarding Everton and the takeover and the second charge of, you know, a potential points deduction as well. But you know, the agenda today, for those watching live on YouTube and Facebook, me and Chris thought it'd be a good idea just to have a little chat about the Everton takeover and the latest on 777. And we know our colleague Joe Thomas wrote a really good piece, a special report, which you can read on the Echo website, all about the latest on 777. It's a really good read. I'd recommend you go and find it. It's on all of our social channels, Twitter, Facebook. And you can also get it on the Echo website, as previously mentioned. Joe is off today, Chris. So, you know, me and you just decided we're not in the office, we're not in the studio today. So we are doing a remote pod, but we thought we'd best to bring the content. Just a reminder, people, please subscribe, show us support, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and also give us a like and a follow and a share on Facebook. So, Chris, the latest on 777 is that, you know, Premier League officials are, you know, set for face-to-face talks. We don't know when it's going to be, but, you know, the reports have suggested that it could be soon. And, you know, we're hoping for a breakthrough. Obviously, it's, you know, from my point of view, what do you think? It's a step in the right direction?
I mean, it has to be, doesn't it? Because whether you're for or against this, and I mean, a lot of people probably somewhere in between, because we don't know the full details of what's going on there. There has to be a finish at some point when the deal was announced mid-September, wasn't it? It was said that, you know, 777 partners, of course, had agreed the deal to buy Farhad Moshiri's controlling 94.1% stake in Everton in full. And they were hopeful of getting a decision by the fourth quarter of the year, i.e. the turn of the calendar year. I mean, way beyond that now. The whole of January, the whole of February, here we are in March now. And it's not been decided one way or the other. In that meantime, I think 777 have handed over significant amounts of money in terms of loans to Everton. They've been a visible presence at matches, mostly with the top man, Josh Wander. He's been there. He's been, to be fair, whatever his motives are, he's been there far more regularly than Farhad Moshiri was for the past couple of years. And I've seen Moshiri remains, as we speak, the majority shareholder of the club. So certainly they've made all the right noises and seem to be doing the right thing. But yeah, all those question marks remain about them, and the fact that Premier League is still not given approval for them, it has to be a concern that it's taking so long. But yeah, like you say, I mean, it has to be decided one way or the other. It was just interesting, if you do read Joe's piece, and I would, you know, I'd encourage all of our listeners and viewers to do that, give them some great insight on what is a very complicated issue, like unfortunately a lot of things are at Everton at the moment. Joe says that this meeting between 777 and the Premier League is not expected to bring an immediate decision. So it's not like, oh, they'll bang a few heads together and it's going one way or the other. I mean, this may not actually be the end, but the fact that they are supposedly meeting face to face to thrash this out, I mean, it has to be positive in terms of reaching the end game one way or the other.
I was going to ask you this actually, Chris, towards the end of the pod, but I'll ask you this now because you've kind of touched upon it. So Josh Wander, he's obviously had a presence at Goodison Park over the past couple of months, you know, since the news broke that a deal had been agreed. You obviously made the comparison there to Farhad Moshiri, who I think has been to Goodison Park, I think, once in the past 22 months. Is this a tactic from, you know, the co-founder of 777 to say to a show of solidarity, a show of unity, and that, you know, they are the right people for the job.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you're going to be throwing that much money at something, you do want to be seen to be there. I mean, one of the tough things for 777 is obviously they already have a portfolio of clubs all around the world anyway. I believe one of the prerequisites when they do go sounding out these clubs, obviously they're known for taking on teams that sort of historic teams with big fan bases, but ones who've fallen on hard times, and Everton seem to tick all the boxes in that respect. But also having an airport in close proximity, they've got ties to the aviation industry, and obviously they like to get in and out of these places easier. And yeah, that's another thing, isn't it? Because they've got teams obviously across Europe, Genoa in Italy, Standard Liège, Belgium, Hertha Berlin, Germany, Red Star in Paris, France, even minority stake in Sevilla as well. Then obviously there's a far-flung one like Vasco da Gama in Brazil. And is it Melbourne Victory in Australia? So they've got this worldwide portfolio of clubs. So it's not like Everton are their only team. And they're not, obviously they haven't gained approval for Everton, but if they were to do, they've already got all these other teams that they own already around the world. So the fact that he's been to Everton so many times compared to Farhad Moshiri, who's only got Everton and is the incumbent owner. I mean, like you say, he was there for the Burnley Carabao Cup game because that was when Goodison paid its tribute to Bill Kenwright. I think it would have been pretty off if he'd not shown his face for that one. Obviously, he was there, not at Goodison, but at the London Stadium for the game, the West Ham game before he sacked Lampard. And then he was, just think, were they there again there this season as well? So he's probably been more times to away games. But yeah, either home or away, because to be fair, 777 haven't just been to Goodison. They've been to the Everton games a lot this season, particularly Josh Wanda. And there was that time, I think it was the Crystal Palace FA Cup replay, when there was about six of them turned up en masse. They'd had a trip down to the new stadium site at Bramley Moor Dock earlier in the day, fact-finding mission on that one to check on progress. They've also been to away games as well, down at Fulham, around that time as well, end of January. Wanda was there with Don Dransfield and the guy from the analytics, Mladen as well, Shorbitz, who's now gone to Barnsley. So yeah, they've certainly been making their presence like seen and heard. And like you say, is this to show that they're dedicated? Is it trying to force the issue? It's for whatever you think about them, good or bad. I think the fact that they are turning up at matches has to be a good thing, rather than someone like Moshiri, who's become increasingly an absentee landlord, and that, you know, not only is he either can't or won't fund the club and the manner he's done in the past. He's hardly been at Goodison since that 5-2 capitulation against Watford under Rafael Benitez.
We're getting a couple of comments coming in, Chris. So the Everton Fan Advisory Board on YouTube, so I think it's their official YouTube accounts, have said, afternoon all, Pablo here. They've also said, thanks to Joe for the 777 article and asking the opinion of the Fan Advisory Board. I think from what I read in that piece, that the Fan Advisory Board have actually submitted a number of questions to 777, but without reply yet. So, you know, it would be interesting to see if, you know, they get a reply, you know, in an open forum where Everton fans could fully understand what, you know, their intentions are of the club. But I suppose, you know, that's probably not going to happen until any takeover, you know, is complete, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating for the FAB and also Pablo. He's someone we met at a recent meeting, Joe and myself, when actually the points deduction was being discussed when Steve Rotham and Andy Burnham were there. But yeah, they submitted those questions, I think, right back in September, I believe, when the deal was first announced. I think there was 14 questions submitted to 777. And yeah, like you say, they're still waiting on answers for those ones, and it's concerning. And I think the FAB also spoke out recently about the uncertainty around all the fact that, like you say, one way or the other, this hasn't been sorted with the club and how it's dragging on. I think they're pretty legitimate questions to be asked. But I mean, I think 777 perhaps hidden under this sort of idea that, oh, we wouldn't want to be sort of colouring events as this process is continuing and while it's an ongoing thing. But yeah, there's going to be lots of legitimate questions that are being asked of this organisation, and the fact that it's just taken so long anyway, like we're saying, going all the way back to mid-September when the deal was announced, and the hopes from the parties involved that it would be all sorted by the end of the year. And the fact that it is dragging on, obviously Jim Ratcliffe at Manchester United got approved a lot quicker. His was only a minority stake. It wasn't a complete takeover of the club. So it is different in that respect. But it just shows you how quickly these things can be done if the Premier League is satisfied with the parties involved. And those questions remain unanswered, both for the FAB, the Everton Fan Advisory Board, and indeed, most crucially of all, the Premier League themselves.
I mean, whatever way you look at it, Chris, you know, our thoughts on the Premier League, or the fans' thoughts on the Premier League, the Premier League clearly aren't satisfied with 777 and the process and everything that, you know, supposedly that 777 have answered. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, we've stated already reports this week that they're going to sit down and have face-to-face talks, which is obviously a good thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it did seem at one point that there was a breakdown in communication between both parties. You know, there was suggestions that 777 had submitted everything that the Premier League asked for. Premier League had basically denied that, so that wasn't the case. So, you know, it's obviously not a good look for either side, because somewhere in between, someone's not telling the truth.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar, isn't it, to the whole Everton points deduction thing. I think Joe wrote that there wasn't any winners in any of that, and that's probably the case, in that neither side of it has come out of it looking great, really, from the Everton point of view, how the club has been run and the great losses that have been incurred, and then the Premier League for the way that they sort of handled the whole process. And obviously that went to the appeal board, and they got 4 out of 10 points back. But similarly with this as well, again with the Premier League holding Everton's destiny is in their hands to a great extent. It seems that they're obviously not satisfied. I mean, obviously, we're not privy to all the details that go on and what's been said and what's been submitted and what hasn't and what's been asked for as such. But, I think given the types of takeovers that we've seen in recent years, I mean, notably with Newcastle United and the sovereign wealth fund of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, there's been an appetite to make sure that the right people come in, and then the people who aren't deemed to be the right people aren't let in when it comes to the takeover of Premier League clubs. And it is a very sort of diligent process. And I think even Richard Masters, who obviously has certain notoriety in Evertonians, given what he said in terms of the points deduction, he's also spoken on this issue and the fact that it's dragged on. And obviously there are questions that remained unanswered from the Premier League's point of view for 777. Yeah, it's a very frustrating process, I think, for everyone involved. But whatever we think of the Premier League, they want to get this one right. They don't want to be seen as letting somebody in who they don't think is fit and proper. And if they have got questions that need answering, well, 777 will have to come up with the answers. But yeah, it's gone on and on. And I think that everyone is just seeking clarity on this issue for whatever is best for Everton. I mean, part of the problem you've got, as I mentioned before, is that I understand that in various loans and overpayments, or 777 have already put in something in the tune of around £200 million, perhaps, towards Everton. And it's very difficult once they've done that. I mean, it's how that all unravels if they weren't to actually get the approval for the takeover. I mean, it's been something that's been mentioned by other outlets, this idea that by putting this money in, it makes it more difficult for rival parties to of a potential takeover to take place, because I remember going back to what Neville Southall said back in the autumn about the time when it sort of first all emerged, and you know, I thought that Nev spoke very very clearly, really, when he was saying about he just doesn't understand why there weren't more interested parties. He thought, well, obviously the new stadium needs funding, but with that on the horizon and all that that would bring, that Everton would actually be a very lucrative proposition for potential investors. He was just surprised that there weren't more people queuing up, and I think it was his words, to buy Everton. And you know, it is curious, really. Obviously, we had the business with the other American investors last summer that looked like they were going to come in all summer. We were told to wait and wait, and it was going to happen. It didn't. Something changed with them and Farhad Moshiri, and then all of a sudden, 777 emerged. But yeah, it's not a satisfactory situation for anyone involved.
The reason I kind of brought up the breakdown in communication, Chris, is because do you think it's had an impact and filter and the instability of everything that's gone on with the takeover? Has that filtered down onto the pitch and affected results? Because we know Dice has openly admitted that the points deduction process and the appeal process with regards to that has had some impact on the pitch, and we know the results have not been good. Or is that an easy cop out for Dice and the players? Do you think they've actually been affected by this takeover talk?
He would say not, and I think he has done when he's been asked about that. He said, says from his point of view, it hasn't done. I think unless that you were in a position where the players weren't getting paid or something like that, I don't think it would filter down to the team as much. I think that the points deduction certainly would do a lot more. That's immediate. They won those 10 points themselves on the pitch. And those players, the same way as the fans, are being punished for something that wasn't anything to do with them. It wasn't their fault. So you can see where it's quite natural sort of human reaction that the points deduction would potentially have an adverse effect. But in terms of this sort of bubbling away in the background, I mean, you can't quantify these things, but I don't think it would have a significant effect on the players. Like I said, it would only be if for whatever reason, they weren't getting their wages in their pockets at the end of every month, or however you pay Premier League footballers. I don't think it's going to adversely affect them. I mean, anyway, it might do if you get to like the summertime and obviously the situation's still wasn't resolved one way or another. Well, then you would be thinking about how is that going to affect players, because are people going to want to move on, or are going to be sort of more susceptible to bids coming in if the ownership issue isn't resolved. But at the moment, and obviously the transfer window's closed as well, I wouldn't cite that as a particularly significant play. I mean, who knows? Every individual's different, but I wouldn't imagine that would be a big thing for the players. And certainly I'd be disappointed if they weren't playing to their full potential because of this. But I think for the fans, though, it's a huge thing. I think a lot of people have actually said to me that who are Evertonians that in many ways this is actually bigger than the whole points deduction thing, because as bad as that is, and certainly on a short-term level, how much that affects Everton, this goes beyond all this, because we're talking about the custodians of the club, but in other ways a crucial time for the club as well in terms of the building of the new stadium. So yeah, not so much with the players, but you can understand why it's such a burning issue for the Evertonians themselves, who have obviously been through so much heartache and continue to be over these last couple of years. It really has been the toughest time ever, I think, for the fan base. I mean, I've lived through last day relegation escapes myself. I was at Wimbledon 94 against Coventry City in 98. You know, they were dire moments, they were nervy moments, but I think never has there been the sort of feeling of sort of despair and frustration of the whole way that things are going at the club. I mean, let's remind ourselves, like I said, with the stadium, this is a time when Evertonians should be joyous in many ways, you know, looking fondly back on, you know, at Goodison Park for its going into its last season next year, you know, the first purpose-built football ground in the country, the ground which has staged more top-flight matches than any other, and then looking forward to that move to the great new stadium on the banks of the Mersey. You know, it's just a once-in-a-lifetime moment for Evertonians, but instead they're left concerned about their Premier League status and concerned about just who's going to be running the club.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, since this deal was agreed, there's been question marks over 777's intentions of buying Everton Football Club, question marks over their reputation, you know, question marks even on how they can afford to buy Everton Football Club and, you know, be able to, you know, fund Everton Football Club. And there was reports this week, I'm not sure if you read the article, I think I read it yesterday, from sources at a Norwegian publication website, Jossamer, I think it's called, you know, suggested that the company basically owed over $3 billion US dollars to creditors, and that was from the summer of 2023. Now, you know, I'm not going to go into all that because we don't know, you know, the ins and outs of it all, but these are obviously legitimate concerns that Everton fans are, you know, are going to be faced with if to be true and 777 do take over the club, because we know that they already own a number of football clubs where, you know, things aren't particularly going great, which I'll come on to in the next couple of questions. But, you know, how do we get around this? And, you know, really, are they even the right fit for Everton Football Club?
Yeah, as Joe mentions in this piece, the likes of Jossamer and Semaphore produced some really investigative pieces on 777. It's an ongoing issue. I said maybe Dave Pearl, our football finance guy, might be better to sort of delve into the money issues and all that side of things. But yeah, they say the teams that they've got into, they're certainly not known for throwing their money about. Where they've sort of have spent their money is in sort of consolidating the clubs as institutions, in that trying to keep them afloat off the field and sort of keep the houses in order in that respect. But they're not the sort, you know, they're not going to come in like Todd Boehly at Chelsea and splash the cash or anything like that. That's certainly not the case. And then there's been concerns over that the money that they spent or not spent at these other teams. And what you're going to have with Everton is that in terms of, because Everton are playing in the Premier League, the richest league in club domestic division in world football, you obviously need the biggest budget of all. So if you're struggling to sort of put the money in at Standard Liège or even like Genoa and Serie A, obviously they had a big sale to Tottenham in January. I mean, who's to say that they're going to be sort of funding Everton transfers? I mean, Everton have seen already, you know, and that's not always the way to success. Unfortunately, probably no club in world football has spent more to get as bad as Everton under Farhad Moshiri. You know, the admissions that the want-away majority shareholder has said himself that you know, they've not always spent large amounts of money wisely. I mean, that's an understatement if ever there was one. But yeah, there's going to be concerns about where the money is coming from, if the money is there, and just how much of it there would be. It's almost like Evertonians are caught between a rock and a hard place, I think it feels like, for a lot of them, in that it's gone so badly wrong under Farhad Moshiri, just squandering millions and millions of pounds and having huge losses. And then you got a new prospective set of owners who've got major question marks over them. I mean, not necessarily in the same areas. It's a very different approach. But, yeah, it's not like wave a magic wand and everything will be okay. They've had to fight lots of publicity battles where they've been questioned from all sorts of angles, like you say, in terms of where the money is coming from and whether they have enough. I think there's been, Joe mentions in his piece, about credit ratings and things like that. I mean, I'm supposed to be a football reporter, but yeah, it's not a good look, and it does, you know, justifiably leaves people with a lot of fears really about whether they are the right people for Everton, because we were being told all of last summer that the other Americans, they were the right people, and to be fair to them, they were sort of proven sports administrators from the US. I mean, their track records, both in the NBA basketball and Major League Baseball, was all pretty solid, certainly a lot more long-established than 777, who were very much the new kids on the block as it were. And it's interesting, just at the end of Joe's piece, towards the end, he mentions that he understands there is genuine alternative interest in Everton from the USA, but whether that ever comes to the surface or not, obviously, like we've mentioned, the way that 777 have sort of muddied the waters already in terms of allowing other potential investors to come in by already giving loans to the club. I mean, you just don't know where, just how straightforward it would be if they did pull out or they weren't given approval and somebody else tried to come in.
Yeah, and a couple of questions then on, you know, there's meant to be another consortium waiting in the wings, American-based. Just remind me, this isn't the same, as far as we know, this isn't the same consortium that originally had, like, came very close to an agreement with Farhad Moshiri.
That hasn't been disclosed by Joe. I would imagine not, given that all that went on, given that, you know, that they were in pole position, they had the period of exclusivity last summer, and then that all fell through. So I would imagine not, but that doesn't say either way in that respect.
Okay, well, I mean, a little bit of case for the fence for 777 based on, you know, a couple of articles that I've read. You know, this is basically their case for the fence. It's not me defending them, just in case anyone starts submitting comments. You know, the group have put much of the problems, you know, to existing teams that they own, basically down to, you know, before they got there. So problems that were there before they, you know, acquired those football clubs. And there was a couple of lines and pieces that I read over the past couple of weeks, you know, with regards to administrative errors, you know, with financing and loans and stuff like that. So is that a case for defence?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
To be fair to them, like you say, that they have come into teams who have been struggling. Both Vasco da Gama in Brazil and Genoa in Italy both had to go down. Then they came back up again. Hertha Berlin went down, although I think they were already sort of on the way out before 777 came in there in the second tier in Germany now as well. So they, you know, they have, things have had to go backwards before they come get forwards. I mean, that would be potentially disastrous in Everton's case, you know, for Everton to drop into the championship. And certainly, you know, if it's talking about going into Goodison Park's final season, I've already mentioned. They've had tough situations which they've come into. And again, I think that's part of the appeal, and maybe that's the wrong word, but when they look at these potential teams who they can purchase, they perhaps think that the ones who are down on their luck or haven't been run to full capacity or in a good way would be the ones that they can take on, because I guess they'll get them for a cheaper price, and there's more scope for improvement there. They feel that they can run the teams better and maybe have their shared resources brought from their global network there, because I know from certainly on the analytics side of things, it's all very much joined together, you know, across the 777 network, with, you know, say the smallest club in the group, Red Star in Paris, getting the same sort of access to information that like the big boys would get. So it is a legitimate defence, I would say, that they have come into troubled outfits, and Everton, you know, would certainly fit the bill in that respect. So it's not like they've come in and were firing on all cylinders. That doesn't seem to be the way they operate. They come into these troubled outfits, but ones who are, like say, seem to have sort of traditions of success in the past and have got large established fan bases, because I think part of the 777 model is the idea that you get the fan base sort of purchase your products, really. That's been certainly an issue, I think, one way or the other in the teams they've had already. You know, it provide the various branded products, and that if you've got a big fan base there, the idea is that you've got more potential customers.
Well, we'll finish off soon, Chris, but I just got kind of wanted to also touch on Moshiri and where he stands in this, because obviously he's not, you know, he's not providing any communication whatsoever, and, you know, he very rarely communicated with the Everton fans anyway when he when he was in officially in charge, still in charge, I suppose. But you know, where does he fit in this? Because he's stuck between a rock and a hard place if this 777 deal does not go through, does it? Because you would have to think that he has to find another consortium, whether it's you know, this unknown American one, or he has to go back to funding the club. There's only two other options, because I think we've talked about this in the past. Surely he would not let the club run itself into administration, because then he would just lose out on all of the money that he's invested in the club over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, he's already lost a whole lot of money that he's not going to get back. But yeah, it's not in his interest, is it, for sort of abandon Everton and leave them on the brink, as it were, because he gets absolutely nothing then. He's already going to make, you know, a huge loss on this operation. There's loss in so many ways, and, you know, it's going to be a huge loss financially for him. He's squandered millions and millions of pounds. His aspirations of being a successful owner and getting Everton to sort of smash through that glass ceiling and compete against the Premier League's established elite, that's just gone absolutely backwards. The whole thing has just been a disaster from his point of view. I mean, the only thing he has got, obviously, is the one big tick, is the way that the stadium, you know, he is the man who has made Everton's new stadium dream, which is sort of been talked of seriously on and off for about 30 years now. You know, he's the man who brought that to fruition. See, there's been aborted attempts before. Peter Johnson was the first one to sort of seriously attempt it. He had his aspirations for what would have been, I think, possibly the biggest stadium in the Premier League at the time. But obviously nobody knew where that was going to be, whether it was going to be Kirby Golf Club or some other unknown destination. Obviously, then there was the other destination, Kirby. In between all of that, we had the other Riverside proposition down at King's Dock. So, you know, the one thing Moshiri has got is that he's made the stadium dream into reality. But other than that, when we're talking about on the field offence, it's just been it's been a fiasco, really. Eight managers in as many years, and is it any surprise, really? But it's been that awful downward spiral. But for all of that, and he has been unfortunate in terms of obviously the time of year, there was COVID, and then there was the war in Ukraine with the invasion there. So that obviously pulled the plug on any more potential investments from Mr. Usmanov, who's easier to sever his long-standing business ties with. I mean, it's just kind of like the opposite of the Midas touch, really. So you want to salvage whatever he can from. Sort of like the burning embers of this mess. So yeah, it's not in his interest to let Everton drift any more than they are. They're already on the brink in terms of the nearer misses from what will be the club's first relegation over 70 years in previous seasons. And this, you know, not out of the woods yet, as we discussed in the podcast earlier this week, following the defeat to West Ham United. So yeah, it's a tough position for him, but you know, unfortunately, he's had to reap what he's sowed, really, for all those bad decisions that he's made in terms of both on the field and off the field decisions in during his tenure. And Michael Ball was talking about this in his Echo column last week, when he was saying, you know, only Everton could get done for a financial charge with a billionaire accountant as their owner. But yeah, look what's happening now in terms of the takeover. It's just dragged on, and will it be a good deal for Mr. Moshiri? I don't know what sort of numbers he's going to be getting even with this deal, and if Swan falls through, I mean, where does he turn to then? He's not in a great place, is he?
I mean, one for just probably further down the line, when a takeover does, you know, end up being completed, Chris, but it'd be an interesting dynamic. But would Sean Dyche find himself in a bit of a vulnerable position? You know, when these owners come in and take over clubs, they like to bring their own man in. I suppose if Sean Dyche wins football matches, he hasn't got a problem. But I would foresee his position with the way the form is at this moment in time, very, very vulnerable.
I think that, like you say, every manager is vulnerable by the vagaries of results. Every manager's got to get results, what he's sort of been protected by at the moment. I mean, we've got to remember, Everton are what, still, what, 13th this season based on performances on the pitch, but of course they have gone 10 games without a win in the Premier League over a quarter of a season. That's not a good run by any stretch of the imagination, given what he had before, all of that, and the wonders he's done, the relative wonders he's done, really. I think it'd be a bit harsh for people to start sort of discussing his position. But I do concede it must be hard for the majority of fans. I mean, Joe and myself, like all those fans who get to travel and, you know, pay their hard-earned cash going up and down the country watching the Blues, they get to see the full picture, whereas the Goodison form has been particularly dire this season, the fact they've only had three Premier League victories, so that's not a good look at all. Yeah, I think, like all, whenever a new owner comes in, I think any manager is always vulnerable to the idea that a new owner would want to bring in their new manager or sort of stamp their authority on things by bringing in their man, as it were. But I actually think that the way, like you say, as long as results are positive or deemed to be as positive as they can be in the circumstances, I think that Sean Dyche's methods might actually be attractive to 777 in the terms that what he has done, certainly in his previous employers at Burnley, where he reserved for almost a decade. He'd got decent results with on modest financial resources, probably the smallest market in the Premier League, what he was having to operate on a budget, sort of do well on a shoestring. So he sort of does fit the bill, so the sort of manager that they would like in that respect. But I'm looking at the sort of appointments they've done at their other clubs, and they've been all over the place. And I think at Genoa, they brought Shevchenko in right at the start, and then they quickly learnt when that one turned sour. So who's to know what's going through the minds of Josh Wander and company?
We've got an interesting couple of comments in the comment section, Chris. This is not really a question, but I just thought I'd let you know. So a couple of comments saying that the Echo don't cover Everton as much as Liverpool. What do you make of that? I think, you know, we send two reporters to every single home game. You go to the away games as much as you can, and we bring you know, articles every single day. We bring you know, nearly one podcast a day. We can only do what we can do. I think, you know, I think Dylan Blue, who else? Paul Hewitt says that, so referring to Liverpool, that's their favourite team. Well, I can assure you that Liverpool are not mine or Chris's favourite team. So yeah, just thought I'd bring that up. I didn't want to like hide away from comments like that. I wanted to hit them head on, that we bring in as much Everton content as possible. Chris is the EFC writer. We've got Joe, who's the EFC writer as well, and they try and find out as much information as possible. I'm the multimedia editor for Royal Blue as well. So, you know, we try to bring in as much content as possible, and it is what it is. Any follow-on from that, Chris?
Yeah, what I would say is probably that all media outlets, whether it's local or national, I think that there's going to be more Liverpool content being generated. That's just because of what Liverpool are doing, and whether we like that or not. But I'll tell you what we do is we cover Everton at every level of the club, and we cover them more extensively. Other major independent media outlets. So that would be where as Ian's just said, you know, the fact that all these Royal Blue podcasts, the home and away coverage from Joe and myself, and obviously the way that we focus on all elements of the club, both on and off the pitch, we cover the Blues more extensively than any other set of professional journalists.
Okay, last question before we go, and it comes from one of the watchers on Facebook, I think it was. Let me see. So, yeah, basically, Chris, I'll give my opinion and then you can give your opinion. Lee Johnson on Facebook has just said, what are your thoughts on 777 and do you think that the takeover will go ahead? I'll let you go first and then I'll follow on. Go on.
Yeah, I think I've got the same concerns that everyone has got, really, in that where is the money coming from? the record at the other teams that they've been at, like we've discussed in extensively here. They've come into troubled teams, which Everton would also fall into that category. But, you know, it's not been a spectacular turnaround. They are new to it. I mean, I'd probably even go as far as saying to be concerned about any American owners, really. But then, there you go. If 777 gets the go-ahead, you've got half the Premier League owned by American owners, just in the fact that, although even if they understand sports, they've got a very sort of different view on the way professional sports is done, because the fact that the way it is over in America, you know, it's closed shop franchises, there's no promotion or relegation. It's a very different thing. And I think you saw that with the proposals for the European Super League, the breakaway there, and the way sort of American owners might have been enticed by the machinations of the Real Madrid people and stuff like that. So, yeah, not, I'm sure I've got a lot of the concerns that that the rest of you have got at the moment. But in terms of will it happen or not, my feeling is that it probably will happen, because it seems to me that obviously the Premier League have got a lot of concerns themselves, and they keep asking them. Maybe it's a case of that they've got these concerns. There's no smoking gun. There's no sort of one thing which is deemed to be serious enough to actually prevent the whole thing coming through. But maybe there's a lot of lesser concerns or questions that they want answering. But yeah, it's obviously a very thorny issue. The fact it's gone on for so long, and you know, you certainly don't want me to give any sort of definitely, I certainly won't be putting my mortgage on it either way. But if you're going to make me choose, is it going to go ahead or not? Given that we're so far down the line now, I'd say yes. But yeah, it's not great, is it?
Yeah, I'm starting to have major doubts now, because I did think, you know, a couple of weeks back, coming on back, that it would be an almost certainty that the deal would go through. But major doubts now that the deal will go through. I think, I don't want to go as far as to say 777 are hiding information or not providing the information to the Premier League, but it does seem to be the case. So we will see. I mean, it's a positive, as we started off this podcast with, you know, hopefully a positive that the Premier League and 777 are going to be sitting down at some point over, you know, the end of this week or the beginning of next week. We know that it's not going to, you know, nothing's going to be confirmed at that meeting. But you'd almost suspect that the Premier League won face-to-face talks just to feel 777 out. You know, all this information that should have been provided, really, there should be a decision by now. I mean, how long can it go on? We know the United one went through fairly quick. We know it was a different deal. We know the Newcastle one took even longer, but there's no reason why this one is in the same ballpark as the Newcastle United one. So, you know, we are, you know, ready and waiting for a decision, and we'll obviously keep everyone posted to see what the decision is over the next couple of weeks, and let's hope we get one. Anything else to add, Chris? I know you've been by yourself today writing a couple of articles. There was a Gary Lineker one, wasn't there?
Yeah.
He was a little bit critical of Everton's finishing, but probably rightly so.
Yeah, if you want to have a look at that one. Basically, just looking about the numbers, we all know that Everton had a lot of shots against West Ham United, and only one of them went in with the better header. So it's kind of looking at a deeper look at the actual numbers behind that and just how significant they are, really. It's unfortunately not a feel-good piece by any stretch of the imagination, but it does kind of show you where Everton are at right now. And then we've got a piece coming up later. Stick with the American theme, actually. It's Tim Howard's birthday today, so many happy returns to him, to Tim. And it's just kind of looking at his legacy at Everton, because I just think that he's perhaps a bit unfairly remembered in some respects compared to what he actually achieved for the club over a decade. So, yeah, a couple of pieces. One that's up already and one is on the way.
Good stuff. Well, we're going to be back on Friday. You're in Friday, Chris, is that right?
I'm off Friday, so that'll probably be Joel, that one.
All right, okay. Well, it will be most probably Joe Thomas. Yeah. We might even get Gav Buckland back on the pod. And I'll see if anyone else wants to jump on. But if not, I'm more than happy to host. But obviously, it will be the United preview. Before you go then, Chris, if you're not going to appear on the Friday pod, just a little tiny little word on United and a little prediction, please.
Wow. Yeah. getting put on the spot today. I've about 777 and now this one. The good thing is that Evan are actually, it's not a good thing, but I mean, good thing going into this fixture is that Evan have been better away from home this season. But the one thing we all know, unfortunately, is that they've not been good at Old Trafford for a very long time. Just one win there since the opening weekend of the entire Premier League in 92. Obviously, Brian Oviedo over a decade ago now. United are going into this on the back of tough run themselves. Eric ten Hag's under big pressure. Obviously, they went ahead against City last weekend and ended up getting well beaten in the Manchester derby. I think if ever to get out anything out of this, as much as we want to get that first Premier League win since the 16th of December, I think just any sort of positive result would be greatly welcomed there. So I don't know. Let's be positive. It's as positive as I can be, and say nil nil.
Okay, I'll take that. I think that's a positive result considering our form at Old Trafford over the past couple of years. Okay, well, that's all for today's show. Please show us your support. Please remember to hit the like button on the YouTube channel, and please subscribe to our Royal Blue YouTube channel. Please follow us on Facebook, which is Everton FC Liverpool Echo. And that's it for today's show. I've been Ian Crowell, joined by Chris Beasley, and this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.